The single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Learn how sales, marketing, and customer success experts create internal alignment, achieve desired outcomes, and exceed customer expectations in a personal and human way. This is the Customer Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ethan Butte.
There's a blind spot or even a black hole in most sales coaching and training. It's basic, it's human, and it's as simple as what would you say if you were in front of an interested person right now? Having a good, clear answer drives human-centered communication and helps you with selling on video. And today's guest will walk you through it. He directed comedy shows and theater troupes at Second City. He was a sales professional at companies like Belly and Groupon. Today, he's a video consultant and trainer who helps sales, marketing, and customer success teams drive revenue with short, personalized video content. Chris Bogue, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited for the conversation. I love what you're up to in general. I'm looking forward to peeling apart your, I'll just call it a LinkedIn persona or something, not that it's not the real you, versus some of the simpler, more straightforward video coaching and training and making video messages in particular more approachable for people. But because this is the Customer Experience Podcast, that's where we're going to start. So my first question for you is the same as on every episode. When I say customer experience to you, Chris, what does it mean?
I'll use a visual. So apologies if you're listening to the audio version of this, but the statement works even if you can't see what I'm doing with my hands. But for me, it's getting the customer from here to here. That's what I do on video, whether I'm making video content for marketing or for my website or for my brand, or whether I'm making a sales video direct to a prospect. I usually want to get one thing across to them. Maybe I want them to teach one lesson. You know, I want to teach one thing to them. I want to get one action from them. I'd like them to understand one thing that maybe they don't understand. If you focus on one thing, yeah, your audience should be, by the end of the experience, at some place different, you know? So that's what customer experience is for me.
Two things I absolutely love about that. One is this idea, of course, that it's a journey. I think we get hints of that, or even we get that directly in a lot of the responses that we get, but you're encouraging me to talk about something that maybe we'll dwell in for a minute, because I think people overlook it, is that it's just any relationship or any journey is just a series of micro yeses with an occasional macro yes. With a macro yes being, yes, I'll DocuSign that 7-figure, 3-year contract, whatever the case may be. But it's all these little yeses, and this, your recommendation of focusing on one thing is so critical for any message, moment, experience, et cetera. Do you feel like that's overlooked by a lot of people?
Yes. So here's something I've noticed in my coaching a lot. All my coaching starts with the audience. And on day one of a coaching session, whether I'm consulting with a company, whether this is for my own like personal thing and I'm training like content creators or entrepreneurs or whatever, the question I ask them is, okay, best case scenario, like you get everything exactly you want. The person you want to watch your video is in the audience watching it right now. Who would you like to be watching this video? And oftentimes they don't know, you know, they're like, oh, maybe I want to get into this vertical because there's a lot of money there. Maybe I want to get into this. I'm like, no, you start with one person. You start with one person. What is that thing you need to teach them? Where is the next little hurdle you need to get them over? You know, then it just becomes a question of, okay, that one thing, what's the smartest, best, most concise, most helpful, most interesting, whatever you want to be, what's the best way to do that? But you can't do that until you figure out who you want your audience to be. And I find so few content creators even start with that question. You know, they're just kind of throwing stuff out there and hoping it works. Whereas I do some crazy stuff in my video content, but it's because I'm so comfortable with who my audience is. You know, I started doing stuff for the people I wanted in my audience, and I started altering my strategy based on what was resonating with them. So from my end, none of this stuff looks like a risk. You know, even if I'm doing like some sketch comedy based stuff out there, maybe it's a little bit of risque or something. These are topics that I've tested with my audience, you know, and I know they're going to get something out of it. You know, once you know who your people are, it frees you to do all these things, all these different topics, all these different ways you can help. But no, I believe very few people, unfortunately, start with that mindset.
so interesting. I think a lot of folks are afraid to commit in the way that you just described yourself as having committed for fear of something else you already said, which is like, but there might be a whole bunch of money in this other vertical that I'm not quite prepared to capitalize on. Or, you know, they have problems that maybe I don't understand well enough to solve. So this idea of like saying yes very adamantly and clearly to a particular set of people, the implication is saying no to some other ones, or at least not right now. And I think a lot of people are scared to do that.
They shouldn't be.
No,
I mean, like anybody who's ever had to like make a career in sales knows, you know, if you spend time chasing the wrong people, that could be your job. You know, if you're spending all your time talking to people who aren't the right fit, aren't the right job, aren't, you know, like it doesn't matter how good they would be for your quota. They don't want it, you know, whereas like I always tell people show up where your customers already are and just get very curious about what's bringing them there. You know, and it was actually funny because like I was on a training like last week, or maybe it was this week. I can't even remember. No, it was last week. But it was a sales team and I was training them on video. And one of them goes, "Hey, by the way, how did you get my boss? You know, he's a head of sales. He doesn't take meetings or he does not answer cold calls. He does not answer cold emails." And I was like, "Dan, go check your DMs. Go on LinkedIn, literally go check your DMs." And I found him the same way I found everybody. I showed up, I noticed something he was interested in. He was engaging with some content that I had also engaged with. And I was like, "Hey, I really like the point you made there. Let's connect." And after, you know, some time, him being in my network and he came to a couple events that I posted up, I sent him a 30-second video being like, "Hey, Dan, don't know how much video your team uses, but, you know, like, let me know if you want to chat about this." It was very short, very direct. And then, yeah, I closed it. I'm training a team and they all bought my course. And it was like, it was nice, but it was like, it started with me going where he already was because I was just looking for people who were already interested in the topics we both talk about. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of pressure. It wasn't very hard. Everything felt very natural because I, you know, you just find your people and you just give them what's relevant to them.
So much good advice in one response there. And before we get any farther ahead, I want to get this out for context. You've already alluded to some of the work that you do, some of the types of folks you work with, but I would love for you to take this on like really, really directly for everyone's understanding and context. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Chris Bogue Communications. Like, who are your ideal customers and what are some of the problems that you're solving for them? Obviously, we have sales teams so far and video. I teased it a little bit in the intro, but I'd love for you to just take a good, clear swing at that.
Yeah. So I have two offerings. So I sell to salespeople and I sell to content marketers and entrepreneurs. I'm either teaching people to do videos that are one-to-one, which is what I do mostly for sales, or I'm doing one-to-many videos, you know, where you are educating your buyers, you're educating prospects, you're building brand awareness. So yeah, I do teach those like separately. So I guess we can talk about them one at a time. For salespeople, I am mostly teaching a process. I'm teaching fundamentals for on-camera performance because most sales teams are not taught those. But most importantly, I teach them how to do it regularly. It is not much different from cold calling or cold emailing in that like either you do it and it works or you don't do it and it doesn't work, you know? And the reason why I talk about these two offerings differently is because I actually, this is probably like not good for me as an entrepreneur, but people get them confused. For sales, I am not doing, quote, creative outreach. That is not what I teach. Some people do that. Some people teach sales how to go out and make like the most creative prospecting video possible. I come from a type of sales where that's not possible. If I had to put on a talent show for every single prospect, that's just way too much work, you know? My method is all about like, how do you make a list? How do you make and send like 5 to 10 videos within an hour or two? And how do you just build the muscle of doing it every day, you know? So for me, it's like video isn't a cure-all for sales. It is a skill just as important as cold calling and cold emailing. But sales leaders, sales trainers, sales professionals have not put in the practice and effort and study of video the way they have for cold calling and cold emailing. You know, so video should fit. It should just be one other tool, one other channel that's driving in sales. But most sales teams don't use it at all because they don't have a process. They're not used to doing this. They don't have best practices. It's too new for them, too many moving parts. So video training, I do that. I teach a cohort for video prospecting. And I also sell a course called The Complete Guide to Selling on Video. And yeah, that is just my sales process completely documented. So from start to finish, how do you go in with just a phone? And then by the end of it, you've got 25 videos shot, edited, captioned, sent out on LinkedIn and or Gmail. That's what that course is. So it's one thing. One-to-one video prospecting. I couldn't sell without it. Absolutely love it.
Okay, really quickly, before we go on to the content marketing, probably more creative stuff.
Yes.
I want to ask a question that would be obvious to you or me because we've spent a lot of time on this in our lives. But for the people that aren't as dialed into this, why is this so important as a skill and a method of outreach alongside typed out messages, alongside cold calling, et cetera? When I assume you're probably talking with salespeople and sales leaders who already have that kind of mindset already. This feels like it's something that's important, but take someone who is basically familiar with the idea of what you just described helping people with and share, like, why does this matter to salespeople?
Yeah. If you're a salesperson, you work very, very hard to talk to a very small number of people. Anybody who's never done sales has no idea how difficult it is. And, you know, in many cases, you know, let's take an SDR, a sales development representative, or you could just call them a cold caller. That's oftentimes what they are. They're making cold calls all day. They are paid based on how many qualified meetings they can set, right? So they call up people all day, they email people, they get meetings on the calendar. They only get paid if that person shows up. And oftentimes what SDRs struggle with is what they call the show rate. You know, you book all these meetings and then people don't show up, which is almost worse than not setting the meeting in the first place, you know, because now you've taken time, maybe you prepared for it. You know, maybe an AE has put that time on their calendar, whatever. You've wasted so much more time. And I have found that just a small human touch point, you know, just a 15 second, hey, Ethan, looking forward to chatting with you on Monday. Here's something I want you to think about. See you at 3 p.m. That is so much more likely to actually drive a person to a meeting. Or at the very least, if they're going to reschedule, I get like 24 hours notice. It doesn't happen like 5 minutes before the meeting. And it's just harder to ignore you. You know, we're a busy world. We're a distracted world. We're increasingly a world where people don't answer unsolicited phone calls. And, you know, when you're selling to an executive and they tell you that they're busy, they're not wrong. You know, it's like, you've got to have a lot going for you if you interrupt them out of the blue on the phone and want to spin that into a good and productive meeting. Whereas the video gives you complete control over how you show up. And that is the thing I really hammer home is like, look, your email might get sent to spam. You might call someone in the middle of a bad day and they're defensive and angry or whatever. If you show up, if the first thing a prospect sees from you is you and you're professional and you're friendly and you're, you know, you're interested in them, you're a little bit more curious, a little bit more thoughtful than everybody else in the inbox, that is what you want, because they might not be ready to take your sales meeting yet. What you don't want is you don't want to be added to the do not call list. You don't want to be added to spam. You don't want people to tell you no thanks, not interested, or, you know, do not call or unsubscribe or whatever. I want them to at least like have me in mind if 5 months from now is a better time, you know? So I find like you can control your first impression and your last impression on video. That is a powerful thing. You have 100% control over your message there with all your storytelling gifts, your tone of voice, your eye contact. It's so powerful, but the fear of doing it wrong just holds so many sales professionals back.
Love it. So we're going to get into that fear for sure. We're going to get even more practical stuff. You offered a lot right there, including this idea of a little human moment. You also, I inferred from what you said, something that I like to share a lot too, is that the video message isn't necessarily about video at all. Video is just the best way to deliver it. You, professional, interested in them, right? This is so key. So we're going to get into some practical stuff there, but let's now double back to the other side of what you teach and coach around video content. And the way that I used to teach is because, you know, we've been at this for over a decade at BombBomb. I've been doing almost a dozen years full-time myself. One of the lines we drew to make this distinction early on was marketing through video versus relationships through video. Marketing through video was this idea of, you know, one for audience, YouTube, social media, embedded, et cetera, performing a variety of purposes. Let's set that aside for a moment and focus on what we call relationships through video, which is this more direct, personal, not as I'm air quoting, creative, just really just a nice human touch point in the mix of all the other outreach. That's the way we separated it. Talk about how you separate it and what you're kind of doing for some of those folks.
Yeah. So content was something I kind of fell accidentally into. I did not intend to be a video content creator, so to speak, but I knew I wanted to teach video prospecting, and I've got this whole other life. I was a sketch comedian for 15 years, so I was writing sketch comedy shows. I was writing for other people, which is a very important part of my style. You know, I do a lot of crossover stuff where I'm writing lines, I'm writing dialogue, I'm writing content for other people. And yeah, I was like, oh, you know what? I'll just go start making content about video, about sales. So I was making talking head kind of stuff where I was just kind of talking to the camera about what I know. And that's fine. I coach people to make that. But I also started throwing in a little bit of character work here and there because I'm a one-man show and I would do, you know, things where I'm like talking about cold calling. So cut to the phone, all of a sudden it's me in like a different shirt, acting different. And like, I kind of can't help it. So I would kind of start picking up other mannerisms as this other person. And then, yeah, I would start pulling my audience on what they liked about the content. And overwhelmingly, they were like, we want more of the sketch comp. Like whatever that was when you threw away to the phone, that was what we liked, you know? So this did a couple of interesting things for me. One, it taught me that serious people, they still like fun stuff. And this is my last job too. My last job before I started my own business, I was working in education technology. And yeah, I learned the same thing. PhDs, Ivy League grads, extraordinarily wealthy people with status, they go to R-rated movies too. You know, they go to stand-up comedy shows. They have a good time. They, you know, listen to music. They're just like regular people. You don't stop laughing just because, you know, you reach a certain net worth. And, you know, it's funny because I'm kind of torn in this situation where like I'm really taught in this like hyper, like it's called, the style is called neo-futurism. We're getting really obscure here, but there's a school of theater that's been going for a few decades in Chicago called the neo-futurists. And I studied with them for a little while and I learned some things from them. And it is this hyper honesty where you're not allowed to play a character. You are always yourself. You have to tell the truth. You have to take the audience on some kind of experience with you. That is the whole premise, you know? So I teach people like, hey, you want to go out there as just you in your element, you know? Everyone says the most entertaining version of them is the version that they are around their friends and family. And I'm like, yeah, that's the version of you we're going to get on video. And, you know, it's like, I don't try to tell people to be funny. I don't try to tell people to go do crazy stuff, but it ends up happening. Cause what'll happen is somebody sends me like a 3-minute long video and like they have some sort of like goofy or unusual moment in the middle of it where they do something silly or they do something a little unguarded or they take kind of an unusual position. And I'm like, start with that. Whatever you did in the middle there, that little moment, put that in the first 3 seconds of your video and see what happens, you know? And there's all these fantastically talented people everywhere. You know, some of them are trained performers. Some of them were stand-up comedians and dancers and actors. And, you know, they just stopped doing that because they had to go be serious. And yeah, I've actually discovered like, no, you could actually do pretty much whatever you want in professional content. And I really push the boundaries. We can talk about that too. I've got all sorts of characters and some of the sketches are a little blue. They've got like bleeped out swear words and I'm playing multiple characters. But again, I never worry that somebody's going to take it the wrong way because I know my audience. You know, the irony is the funnier the comedy is, the more serious like information I can actually pack into the video. And if I'm doing something like selling my brand, trying to get signups for a new cohort, trying to get consulting deals or something like that, it's actually way easier if I put it in a funny infomercial and push that out there publicly. You know, it's a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. I can get a lot more information to the audience if I wrap it in a package that's just a little bit delightful.
Yeah, and move some of the most fun stuff up front. By the way, bleeped out swear words are almost always funnier than the word itself.
Yes, I will even sometimes, if I have a guest bit, because it says in the script, whenever I do a sketch with somebody, it says in the script, like, read all the swear words as written, I'll bleep them in post. But sometimes I bleep words that aren't even swear words.
Yeah.
And I make it sound like they're swear words because it's just funnier. Like, it sounds way more vulgar. And it's like, the unbleeped version isn't even bad. You know, this one just sounds terrible because you just cut it so you hear half of the hard consonant sound. And then the audience, you know, fills in what awful thing they think was said.
Totally. So good. So good. Before we get into the benefits of comedy and improv for really any sales motion, including video communication, I want to get back to that fear thing because, you know, ultimately I've observed, and I wonder how much you've observed similar, that this fear comes up in a variety of different ways. And it really is masked through a variety of different excuses. And so what I'd love for you to do is kind of take down this idea that you don't need to be a singer or a performer or an actor. You've already said it, but feel free to go back at it again and feel free to share some of the ways, if you've observed the same as I have, that fear comes masked as other excuses for why this isn't useful or appropriate for me or my team or my company or my audience, even though I've never tried it. Like, knock down the objections and then maybe give a couple tips on overcoming the initial fear.
Yeah. So I will say the most common excuses I hear is they're like, oh, you know what? I need a better camera. I need a better microphone. I need a better this. I need a better that. You know, I've got a friend who's a really good editor. They're going to help me later on with some stuff. And, you know, you can do so much with just your iPhone, you know, and I know people who are professional content creators. They've literally got an entire video production team. They've got, you know, these ridiculously expensive cameras and they do half their stuff on an iPhone anyway, because it's there and it's HD video, you know, and it's good video quality. So if you show up well framed and you're confident and you look into the camera, you look like a professional video star. They don't know that you're not qualified to be talking to them because there you are. You know, I firmly believe anybody can be good at this. I've got some examples of people I know who just unexpectedly discovered they were really good at this. And now it's kind of changed their lives. But yeah, you know, people don't Google things. I wish they did. Sometimes I see some moron spouting off and I'm like, gosh, I wish that person would shut up because they don't know what they're talking about. And people are like, oh, well, they sound pretty smart. Listen how confident they are. And it I want people to go Google my stuff. When I'm talking about video, I want them to be like, Chris Bogue, is that guy qualified to talk about video? Why don't I go Google his life's work? You know, why don't I go watch all his wonderfully prepared video content? They don't do that. They listen for 30 seconds. If you're lucky, I mean, you got to get them for 3 seconds first, but they're going to sit there and think about whether or not your message is relevant. That is the only thing they care about. You know, if people tell me they talk about a quote boring topic, I say, well, it's not boring to your audience now, is it? You know, if your life is mortgages, if that's how you paid for your house and your car, and that's how your children eat, and like, this is what you've spent your career on, it's actually not that boring. You actually probably have lots of interesting insights that the average person doesn't have about why it's important, you know? And this is actually a criticism I have of a lot of other comedians that I see out there doing comedy sometime. And a different difference between what I do and what other people do is I always say, I don't make fun of other stuff. I'm not out there saying that things are stupid. And I make fun of LinkedIn, but I don't make fun of the fact that we're posting on LinkedIn. Like, I don't try to act above the medium that I'm in, you know? And I find a lot of times people, they want to go out there and they see the edgy critics criticizing everybody, you know, and one part of them is afraid of, they don't want to be on the other end of that. They don't want someone making fun of them. And then, yeah, they get on camera and they don't really know what to do. So they just kind of, they'll be very sarcastic, or they want to just talk about the things they hate or the people they don't like or whatever. And I'm like, actually, if you just show up and you're interested in a topic that the audience is interested in about, that's all you need. An example of this that I love, this is, I had her on my show once. This woman's name is Lydia Allen. She's a teacher and she's dyslexic. And, you know, she was teaching for a while, then she started her own business. She was consulting with schools, consulting with parents. She was doing like work on like how to accommodate children with dyslexia. She got on TikTok and she started making videos, and she was walking around her backyard one day and she's talking about dyslexia. And then all of a sudden her phone started blowing up and just millions of people were watching the video. And yeah, pretty soon she just had a regular audience of 1.4 million. And she literally had to close down her business temporarily and say, hey, I'm sorry, everybody. We were not equipped to take this much inbound business. We have to go rework a couple things before we can get back to you. So I'm very sorry. We're not equipped to handle the phone calls and emails coming in. We'll be back. But she's not an actress. She's not a comedian. In fact, growing up, all the teachers told her that she was stupid. They thought she was stupid and lazy because she was dyslexic and it was hard for her to read. And, you know, this is not, dyslexia is not something you hear about, you know, on TV. They're not talking about it on the news shows or whatever like that. But there's so many people that are dyslexic, you know? So they get on TikTok or YouTube or wherever they find Lydia and they're like, oh my gosh, it's like this woman is in my mind. You know, like, here's this person who finally understands. You know, and she says now, she's like, I wish I knew that was the video I was going to break through on, because her hair was messed up. She was like wearing a hoodie. She was, it was like complete random thought off the top of her head. And it really struck a chord with the audience, you know? And I'm like, that's just, she is a teacher. She is a teacher. And this is something that happened with me too. I thought all the skills I was doing were useless, you know? Then I got on video and I realized how powerful it was. But you wouldn't have known who I was a couple of years ago. I was just some nobody. And I was not making videos. I didn't have much of a web presence, you know? But yeah, it always looks like everybody's more successful until you start doing it. And then you kind of just, you're just kind of another person on the screen.
Absolutely. That reminded me of, you went a different direction with dyslexia than I expected. I really appreciate the honesty of that first video, that being my real hair in the moment and an honest thought off the top of my head and from my heart. I'm thinking of two longtime BombBomb customers who've each sent thousands of videos from our platform, both of whom were dyslexic, and they felt like this just saved them so much heartache, embarrassment, confusion. I can just talk to people. I'm great at talking to people, but it's the idea of like capturing my intellectual thoughts and communicating them in sentences and paragraphs was always frustrating for me and potentially embarrassing with misspellings, you know, misuse of punctuation, grammar, et cetera. Being read the same way that this woman's teachers growing up maybe read her. So go to, for folks who aren't familiar with this idea of improv in general, it's something that I am only a couple years into being familiar with as a great training ground for being more confident and more successful in any customer-facing capacity, but in particular in sales. Talk about the benefits of your background in theater and in improv to your, and let's even go like pre-video, to your initial, you know, handful of sales jobs.
Yeah. So the word improv has a lot of misconceptions about it.
Good. Yeah. Let's knock that down first.
Yeah. Improv is not about jokes. It's one of the first things I teach when I'm teaching improv. I tell everybody, I go, we're all going to breathe in. Now breathe out the need to be funny. You know? Just breathe out the need to be like, breathe out the need to impress your audience. It's not about telling jokes. Improv is about listening, and it's about supporting a partner and supporting your scene. And it's not about trying to make yourself look really good. It's about making the other person look good. This is something I, and you know, as an improviser, you think of it, it's like, okay, well, you know, if the goal here is to make the best scene possible, you know, which means that like for the sake of the show, my partner is a genius. I need to treat everything they say as if it's gold. And yeah, we got to build a relationship on the spot, you know? So it's like you hold on to your character and you pick, you know, you pick your point of view. And the goal is you just have to say yes and move the action of the scene forward. And, you know, it's really a listening game because especially in Chicago, which is like, I mean, Second City was created here in the 1950s. It is a theater where half of, you know, the cast of Saturday Night Live traditionally comes from. And yeah, it's so much of it is listening. And so much of it is, you know, like Improv Olympic was another big theater where Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and all of them came from. And that's long form improv. That's like you get one word from the audience and you go for like 30 or 40 minutes.
Wow.
You know, and how that works is there's an idea generator in the beginning and you know, you're kind of, maybe it's a storytelling thing. There's a lot of different ways to generate ideas, but you really want to listen closely, you know, and that was something I learned on the stage is like, if there's a incredibly specific thing that the audience yells, or there's a super specific detail from one of those starting stories, and 25 minutes later into the show, you bring it back. You know, someone mentions their diet Dr. Pepper or whatever, and you're like, did someone leave a diet Dr. Pepper in the shower? The audience cracks up because they remember that little turn of phrase. And that was always something I did in sales too, where it's just like, I always want the prospect to see that I'm listening. And a lot of that comes from like using their language as they talk, asking a lot of open-ended questions to get them really like out of their head. And yeah, I found that if like, you know, 20 minutes into a call, I was like, you know what, Ethan, I'm going to go back to something you said 10 minutes ago. You said earlier, blah, 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 blah. Now I'm going to show you this next slide, you know? And that's so much more like impactful than just like running through a slide deck when you can tailor it to someone for their reason, their own reasons. So yeah, improv taught me to listen. And as a content creator, improv taught me like it's different than traditional theater because the audience is part of the show. Theater production, you could just do it with no audience in the room. Everybody knows their lines, everybody knows their cues. Improv needs an audience. You need to get the suggestions from somewhere, you know? So the oldest trick in the improv book is to break the fourth wall. If you want to get a laugh, walk off the stage and go sit down at a table with some of the audience members where they're having drinks and just like pull them into the scene. It blows their mind. Same thing with the content. You know, I teach people, I'm like, you should be going out there regularly getting questions from your audience, have opportunities where they can interact with you, use those interactions to create new content. But yeah, these are the principles I follow. It's about listening. It's about your audience. It's about the other player. I am the least important person in the show. You know, and that goes for me on video too. I always say, even if it's just me talking to a prospect, this is a two-person video. I am one person. The camera is person number two. And the camera is actually the main character. The prospect is actually the main character. I am the supporting player. And that's the role I play on LinkedIn too.
And you're listening to things that obviously aren't being said back to you. I would love for you to just spend another minute in this because I, like you, I'm sure everyone thinks they're going to be fine in video messages because they're on Zoom every day or Teams or Google Meet or whatever. But that is this live give and take. That is a lot more like a real conversation. And this is different in two ways. One, I can play it back before I send it and overjudge every single frame of it and choose not to send it. I've heard that story too many times. And then the other one is developing this unique skill of communicating with someone as if they're there based on, because your observation about listening is a real thing. That's why you want to create those interactive moments between video messages, get questions so that you know what's really on people's minds and what's on people's mind today. It could be the same question, but they're asking it a little bit differently now than they were 6 months ago or whatever. There's all this feedback we can use. And there's even, of course, prospect and customer feedback loops that can inform us when we're treating that camera lens as a human being. But just talk about the different dynamic of communicating in a recorded video versus communicating what you and I are doing right now live synchronously on a video call.
Yeah, I guess the nicest way I can say it is most people aren't as good on Zoom as they think they are. Most people aren't looking for the feedback because they don't want to do that level of self-reflection. And this is something, if anybody wants to go out there and be a video content creator, this is something you're going to have to seriously think about. But I am a believer that you should watch your own stuff. Like you have to watch your own stuff. If you don't want to watch it, you know, you're going to get an audience to watch it. Like, I don't know. The only reason why I'm able to do what I do is because making a video is like five different steps. It's like a process with five different parts. And I divide those up very deliberately. You know, when I'm writing, I'm not editing. You know, I got to get start to finish. I just got to get the thing written. When I'm filming, I'm not dealing with camera stuff or whatever. I'm fully focused on my on-camera delivery. And then when I'm editing, I'm fully focused on the edit. How do I get the most effective edit out of this possible? So when you watch yourself, you can see if you're fidgeting. You can see if you look nervous. You can see if you're moving around too much. You can see if you're too aggressive. You can see if you're too overly energetic. You'll see right away because you'll cringe. We all cringe, you know? But that's how you get better. You have to be able to improve. So for me, it was watching myself. It was having to edit my own stuff. And, you know, I was on a 3-year creative dry spell before I started doing video content. I thought I was done with comedy forever. And yeah, I noticed, I'm like, oh, I'm funnier than I thought, you know, because I still record my lines like an actor. So, you know, if I'm doing a character, I'll give 3 different recordings of the same line. You know, I had this ad one time where it was like, it starts with me and I'm like, I'm Chris Bogue, boop, 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 boop. And then it cuts to like me on a couch watching that version of me. And I've got like popcorn, I throw it up in the air and I go, that could be me. And then it stops and the ad starts. Well, I tried 3 different recordings of that same line. You know, I try one where I go, that could be me. And then I tried, that could be me. And I tried, that could be me. And I watched all 3 and I'm like, line number 2, for some reason, is 50 times funnier. So that's the one that goes in the video, you know? But I had to watch it with an objective eye. I had to watch it and be like, which one of these do I think is the funniest? And, you know, I'll watch my old videos and they're not bad, but every time I repost an old video, it gets shorter. Because the more I do this, the more I have an objective eye to be like, you know what? This moment's a little repetitive. This sentence is basically saying the same thing I already said. Let's just cut it. You know, now it's going to be a 46-second video instead of a 53-second video. And that's even better, you know, but I had to watch it enough to become dispassionate. I had to be able to separate my performance from my feelings of self-worth, you know, just because I made a video that didn't perform well, or just because I didn't look particularly good on video once doesn't mean I'm bad at what I do. And it doesn't mean that, you know, whatever. But yeah, I actually had to do that. And then here's the other part too, that everybody who wants to do video content, I swear to you, please do this, is ask for feedback. If you see other content creators and you're intimidated because their content is better, actually just see if they'd be willing to give you advice. You know, one thing that I did early on was I just sent my stuff to everybody. You know, I had all these friends, they went to Hollywood, they got in movies, they got, you know, they started businesses. Some of them did very well for themselves. You know, I know people who started companies, who've exited companies, who've had all these very successful lives. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, I'm such a loser. All these people are so much more accomplished than me. But then I started saying, wait a minute, I'm connected to all these accomplished, cool people. maybe that's to my advantage, you know? So I started making video content and I started sending it to them being like, hey, I'm doing this new thing. You know, if you're interested, I'd love for you to give this a watch. And people started replying, being like, that was good. Like, that was good, you know? And people I know who make a very good living for themselves as professional content creators, yeah, they'd be like, hey, you know, here's a couple tips to make this better. You're going to have to make a few hundred of these, you know, if you really want to pick up steam, but like, keep going. And the fact that I was able to hear somebody, or, you know, even if they're just reading, the fact that somebody was able to say, no, I got value out of this. I liked it. I liked the joke. I understood the point. I thought it was an interesting point. That kept me going. And that gave me insight as to what is landing and what's not landing. But most creators don't ask for the feedback. They're afraid of it.
Yeah, watching it back and asking and being open to the key. Asking is one thing. It's useless if you don't listen to it. Feedback is so critical. And I would assume that you're coaching the same process for the style of video that isn't edited, you know, where you're not going to take 6 or 7 seconds out, but you're going to do approximately this video 5 to 10 times a week. And so by week 4, you should A, have gotten some feedback maybe from your peers or your boss or even from some of your prospects or customers.
Yeah, no, and you could get that feedback in your watch rates.
Yeah, absolutely. Good call.
People tell me, they're like, oh, well, my prospect only watched 10% of my video. I go, okay, what happened to the 10% mark? You know, if they dropped out 17 seconds in, I would go 17 seconds into the video and get very curious about what happened there. You know, and the numbers don't lie. And that's, I've noticed most of my videos, when I send them out, the prospect either watches 0% of the video or 100% of the video. You know, if they're dropping off, there's usually some kind of a reason. And yeah, again, sometimes maybe it's too long to get to the point. Oftentimes it's because like it's not a personalized video and there's a lot of different ways that people try to pretend like it is. You know, it's, and I did this too when I started off, I would make these videos where I would just record myself saying one person's name and then it would like have a cut and then it would jump to like a more generic kind of video. That edit point was where the drop off was. You know, the audience saw, oh, this is a generic thing. I could probably go read it on his website or whatever. And they just stopped, you know, but that is feedback. If they're not opening the video, if they're not watching it fully, that is a huge signal that you're not doing enough to show them that this message is for them.
Yeah, really good call. And the other thing, because there are people now doing fake first name videos where they're just completely faking it all together. And it, in my opinion, it mistreats the person's name as the thing that's relevant to them when in fact, it's not. You could still say their first name in a personal video, but if it's a poorly targeted and poorly structured message, it's not going to be to your advantage at all to have said their first name and done it 85 times instead of once for 85 different people. Talk a little bit about that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like I got a video the other day where someone faked like it was for me and they made all these claims about all these things that they thought they knew about me. And it was like so hollow. It was just so empty. And it felt to me like too broad a message, didn't know your audience. It wasn't clear what was in it for me. And it also made another fundamental error that I know you're very sensitive to, which is essentially trying to sell me a service that I assume is a 5 or a 6 figure service in a video message, but that's not the video's job. So like, I guess I'll turn this into a specific question. As you're looking at people's videos, let's stay with the simpler style of a sales video. What are some of the most common pieces of feedback that you give others in order to help them be more effective? I just teed up a handful of them, but take it anywhere you want.
Yeah. More than anything, I'm just trying to demonstrate a level of care and attention in the videos. You know, when you're going one to many, the bigger the audience you're going for, the more you kind of need to dumb down your message. There's a reason why like commercials these days are just like zany celebrities and here's a crazy CGI. It's like the audience is so broad that you have to kind of go for the lowest common denominator. Individual human beings are smart. And I was always trained as an improviser, the audience is more intelligent than you, you know. Play on stage as though the audience is already 2 steps ahead of you. And that's what I do on LinkedIn too. That's what I do with my content. Executives, people who run companies, people who are on LinkedIn, they have more education than the average person. You know, the higher the level of income, the higher the level of education. You know, it's like you can just talk to them like they're an adult. And yeah, for me, it's not even so much the words as like, I can send a generic video out as a prospecting video and get emails, but I wouldn't try to pretend like it was something it wasn't. I would send something out there being like, hey, the reason why you're receiving this video is because you've been coming to my live streams and I'm sending out this exclusive offer to all my live stream fans before it goes public. Blah, 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 go to my website here and that, and then like respond to this if you want a direct message. I think something like that is fine, you know? And if I was going to deep fake a video and send it to 300 people, my first lines would probably be like, hey, this is a deep fake video. I'm not real. Here's why I did this, you know? But I've always got to get the audience onto my side, and vulnerability is how you do that, you know? And actually putting yourself out there, it's like, hey, I'm interested in you. I'm talking to you because I wanted to put a face to the name. There's inherent vulnerability in that. And if you do it the right way, your prospect is more likely to respond because they're like, oh, this thoughtful person actually took a moment to reach out to me. You know, whereas the second they realize that you just sent it out to 1,000 people, the incentive to respond just disappears because they know you didn't take the time to personally reach out to them. So why are they going to take the time to personally reach out to you? Whereas, yeah, the way I do it and the way I look at a lot of what I'm communicating out there in my style is it's all about reciprocity. I took a moment to be thoughtful for them. So what do you think they're going to do? They're going to send something vulgar and tell me to never call them again? No, they're probably going to say thanks. And then if they're interested, we'll have a meeting. If they're not interested, they'll probably say, hey, thanks, but I'm not interested. And that's fine. You know, as a seller, if you're not getting any no's, you're doing something wrong. You know, you're probably so off-putting that people don't want to tell you the truth, you know, whereas I come and I'm just on video for 30 seconds and just say, hey, here's the thing I noticed about you. I know you're working on this. I know you're working on that. I'd love to chat with you. Let me know either way. You know, if you're interested, respond to this message with anything. I tell them you could send me a thumbs up if you want me to just send you some available times. And if you're not interested, that's fine too. Just let me know. You could even send me a thumbs down and I will mark that you do not want to receive videos like this. But you know, just let me know. Thanks a lot. And like, that's the video. It's short. I give very clear instructions for what they can do, including a way out in case they don't want to deal with me. That is totally fine. But how long does it take to record a couple videos like that? Not very, like the effort it takes to go through all the deep faking and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. How many prospects do you actually need to hit your quota? You know, you could probably do the work a lot more simply if you get focused on your people.
We are so, you and I are so keen on so many of these themes. I'll just restate a couple things that I just absolutely appreciate about what you just shared there. It's not as much about the words that you say as it is about the respect and care that you show to the other, that you demonstrate for the other person such that they can feel it. And then they receive the video not as some kind of imposition on their time or attention, but as a gift of your own time and attention, which then provokes a mutual respect and some reciprocity. I love the idea of giving them an out and letting them make the choice. I appreciate so much this idea of you can do whatever you want, just don't make it act as if it's something else. I think right. In that deceit, there is something that is not the foundation for good relationship building, you know, because it's acting like something that it isn't. And then that came up with one of our guests, Bill Ammerman. For folks who are enjoying this conversation, which sadly we're going to have to bring to a close, even though we easily have 3 hours of conversation on these themes and topics, I want to point you to a couple other ones that you might enjoy. Episode 156 with Julie Hansen, who is featured in our book, Human-Centered Communication. We called that one An Actor's Guide to Authentic Videos. And Julie was a sales professional who didn't, I'm paraphrasing what she told me about her motivation to get into acting, which was, I looked around in my sales role and I didn't feel as confident as everyone else looked. And she discovered acting and improv as a means of developing those skills. And now she teaches people how to be effective on video as well. So that was episode 156 with Julie Hansen. And then a little bit earlier, episode 130 with John Sweeney, who runs a theater up in Minneapolis. And we talked, he's also a salesperson. We called that one The Mindset of Improv and Sales. And so if anyone listening enjoyed that touch on improv in particular, and I just want to say again, Chris, I love the way that you broke down the idea that it's not about being funny. It's about listening above all and bringing other people into it, making it about other people. For anyone who wants to dive deeper into this idea of improv as an effective tool for all of your sales work, episode 130 with John Sweeney. Before I let you go, Chris, I would love for you to thank or mention someone who's had a positive impact on your life or your career.
Yeah. So I'll give a shout to my Second City coach. Back when I was taking classes, my Second City director, Joe Chains, really one of the first teachers I had who was like, believed in me. And I'm just a big fan of him. Anybody wants an improv coach, hire Joe Chains. And then I'll also mention for a LinkedIn content creator, I'll mention Nick Capozzi. I love Nick Capozzi. He's a great video guy. He's a guy who got on video. He has a very fascinating story where he was on a cruise ship and there was like three channels on the cruise ship. It was like the Weather Channel, ESPN, and him. And he could just do whatever. And he's a fascinating guy because he's another one who learned to talk to the camera just all the time. And he's, you know, the version of him on camera is the version of him you get in real life. And he's just been a big supporter of mine. And he's a cool guy. Check out Nick Capozzi, everybody at home, if you're not following him already on LinkedIn.
Awesome. I link all this stuff up in the episode description right down below in your podcast player or in the write-ups we do at bombbomb.com/podcast. So I'll link both of those gentlemen up. And how about a company or brand that you personally appreciate for the experience that they deliver for you as a customer? Who's doing a great job of customer experience for you?
Well, do I get a chance to promote chrisbogue.com? Because I got a course.
Of course. That's the next question, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Companies, let me think who's like... I don't want to upset anybody. I really do want to just say, I'll give a shout to Adobe. I'm just going to shout to Adobe specifically for the captions. We didn't talk too much about captions here. I'm a huge believer in captions. Captions are so powerful. If ever you upload a video and there's auto captions, take a moment to edit them. Just go in there and correct the typos. You would not believe how much that will transform your engagement score. You'll thank yourself for it. More people will watch your videos if the captions are accurate. And yeah, I am just in love with Adobe. I make fun of companies that say they'll give you superpowers. They really do. I can make myself fly and I can shoot lasers out of my eyes and everything because I can edit on Premiere Pro. But their auto transcriptions are just absolutely fantastic. Their captioning is wonderful. I'm so happy with them. And we talk about experience. Their customer service people are incredibly accommodating, incredibly understanding. If you have issues as a small business owner, Adobe's customer service is actually worlds above what most companies are. So I'll show them some love for the customer experience theme.
Awesome. Well done. And now, for anyone who wants to learn about your course or they want to learn about your cohort approach to training, connect with you on LinkedIn, any of the things we talked about, where would you send people?
Yeah, so you can go to chrisbogue.io. That's where you can purchase the complete guide to selling on video. You can also check out testimonials there. You can watch the infomercials. They're funny, but educational. Yeah, go to chrisbogue.io. Also, I run cohorts. So it's group coaching. If you want to learn, if you want to start making video regularly, I find that is the best way to do it. You meet once a week as a group. We have assignments. But most importantly, we support each other. We grow together. We review each other's videos and give feedback. So yeah, you can sign up for all of that at chrisbogue.io. Or you could just follow me on LinkedIn. So if you go search Chris Bogue on LinkedIn, don't forget to ring the bell. You can follow me. I create sketch comedy all the time. I'm doing live events all the time. You know, come check it out. I'm always talking about video, sales, improv, on-camera performance, content creation. This is the stuff I live for. So yeah, follow me and shoot me a DM too. I'm a chatty Cathy. I'm always down to talk about this stuff. So I would love for anyone listening to this episode to come support me. And yeah, purchase the course if you're interested. If you show up with no video experience or no sales experience, by the end of the course, you'll have your first 25 videos shot, edited, captioned, and sent through BombBomb. So check it out.
Awesome. Your passion and your expertise are tangible. I really enjoyed this conversation, Chris, as I have all the times we've connected. I think this is the first one we've recorded. I'm glad we did. Appreciate you. And I hope you have an awesome afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
A marketing futurist from Salesforce, the first salesperson at HubSpot, an emotional intelligence expert with 7 U.S. patents in the analysis of facial coding data. These are just 3 of more than a dozen experts featured in the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Human-Centered Communication, a business case against digital pollution. The purpose of the book? To give you frameworks, strategies, and specific tactics to create human connection across the digital divide. Learn to break through the noise, build trust, and enhance your reputation and revenue despite the ever-increasing digital noise and pollution that separates us all. Get your copy of Human-Centered Communication absolutely free at bombbomb.com/freebook. That's bombbomb.com/freebook.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Experience Podcast. Remember, the single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Continue learning the latest strategies and tactics by subscribing right now in your favorite podcast player or visit bombbomb.com/podcast.